be met with fire and fury like the world has never seen.
North Korean nuclear warheads, an apparent reality. It's Wednesday, August 9th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hello and welcome. Join us too on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, the top U.S. diplomat visits Thailand. A Thai journalist targeted for his Facebook posts. A big earthquake strikes China, treating concussions, and your shoes have become smarter. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The U.S. Defense Intelligence Agency says it reached a conclusion last month that North Korea has successfully built a miniaturized nuclear warhead it could fit inside its missiles. Other experts have said in recent months that such an advancement by Pyongyang was probably years away as the Kim Jong-un regime pursues to become the world's ninth full-fledged nuclear power. The Washington Post newspaper quotes the defense agency's assessment that North Korea has produced nuclear weapons for ballistic missile delivery, to include delivery by intercontinental ballistic missiles. North Korea has said in recent days that the ICBM it tested in a launch last month was capable of hitting the United States mainland, an advance it had not previously claimed. Tuesday's developments led U.S. President Donald Trump to issue a stark warning to North Korea.
North Korea best not make any more threats to the United States. They will be met with fire and fury like the world has never seen. He has been very threatening beyond a normal statement. And as I said, they will be met with fire, fury, and frankly, power, the likes of which this world has never seen before. Thank you.
Trump, speaking to reporters at his private golf club in Bedminster, New Jersey, used forceful language rivaling that frequently heard from Pyongyang and likely to prompt concern that war could resume on the Korea Peninsula, where 3 years of combat in the early 1950s ended in a stalemate. It is not known whether North Korea has tested a smaller nuclear warhead, although it said last year it had. After one successful long-range missile test in July, state media declared North Korea as a proud nuclear state with an ICBM rocket that can now target anywhere in the world. Media reports referencing the Defense Intelligence Agency report say it is believed Pyongyang has now amassed 60 nuclear weapons, although some experts think the number is smaller, perhaps half that. The DIA's reported conclusion comes as the United Nations Security Council unanimously imposed new sanctions on Pyongyang on Sunday in an effort to cut $1 billion of its $3 billion in annual export income. Trump earlier Tuesday on Twitter commended the international community for confronting North Korea over its nuclear weapons development, even as his UN envoy said she is skeptical that the latest sanctions will deter Pyongyang. VOA Asia's David Byrd spoke with VOA national security correspondent Jeff Selden about Pyongyang's evolving threat and what national security officials have been looking at in recent months.
One of the consistent themes we've been hearing from security officials, intelligence officials, since President Trump came on board is the concern they have about North Korea and about how rapidly it's advanced its capabilities. This past May, during the annual Worldwide Threats Assessment hearing that Congress has, the Director of National Intelligence, Dan Coats, spoke, and he spoke about a photograph that they had, a Kim Jong-un photograph beside a nuclear warhead. And the way it was set up, it looked as though they had, at that point, a nuclear warhead that could fit into a missile, i.e. they've miniaturized the nuclear warhead for an ICBM. This is something that military officials, Pentagon officials, have been worried about for quite a long time. As far back as 2014, the commander of U.S. forces in Korea had warned that the assessment was North Korea had the capability to do this, although it had been several years before they had seen them try to do that or test out the capability. Obviously, of late, they've been ramping up the testing. The curve has advanced in terms of what they've been able to do. And so there's significant concern about what this means, because North Korea does like to shake things up on the Korean Peninsula and in East Asia.
Now, it comes at a time when the United Nations has just imposed more sanctions on Pyongyang, and the ASEAN conference also talked about North Korea denuclearizing the peninsula. But do those kind of sanctions appear to be working, or is this just something that North Korea is going to do regardless of what the rest of the world says?
There's a clear belief that sanctions can have an impact. The problem is, according to intelligence officials, is that North Korea has become very savvy, very sophisticated in how they learn how to operate and get around some of those sanctions. Also, there's been concern about how much China has actually done. President Trump's been pressing China to do more, at times saying that they've been trying, at times saying he's disappointed with their efforts. But trying to get China to step up, China is in a difficult position from the Chinese point of view. Do they want a nuclearized North Korea, a North Korea with the ability to deliver nuclear warheads on ICBMs? That U.S. officials are pretty sure they don't want. But at the same time, they want a stable Korean Peninsula. They don't want a war. They don't want the U.S. doing anything that's going to cause a flood of refugees suddenly pouring into China and possibly destabilizing China. So can the sanctions work? Yes. People will point to how some of the sanctions against Iran worked well enough to get a nuclear deal before they were eased. And obviously, there's still a lot of debate on that. But there's a chance they can work. More has to be done going after some of the secondary financiers, some of the targets you wouldn't normally think, not the big banks, but the smaller banks, the regional banks that may be helping North Korea. The other concern, though, with North Korea is that they have been able to work with other countries. One of the things that intelligence officials have said is that they've actually been exporting some of their technology to other countries. They mention Iran and Syria. So can you stop Iran and Syria from working with North Korea? That's going to be a more difficult challenge. So again, there's a lot of concern. And ultimately, it comes down to what will Kim Jong-un do with this capability? He says he wants to strike the U.S., that he's willing to strike the U.S. Is he actually, in the Western view, crazy enough to go that far? And that's a big question. The U.S. consistently has said, despite seeing North Korea as an elevated, more significant existential threat, they see Kim Jong-un trying to learn from the example of other dictators who have given up their nuclear weapons, and he doesn't want to follow in the path of a Saddam Hussein or a Gaddafi in Libya, where they gave up the capability or gave up the idea of that capability and then were taken out. His ultimate goal, they think, is regime survival, and he'll play this any way he can to ensure that he stays in power.
Now, President Trump, today at his resort in New Jersey, said basically that if North Korea continued to threaten the United States, it would be met with, in his words, fire and fury like the world has never seen. Do you think that Kim Jong-un pays any attention to those kind of quotes, or is that just something that he's going to, you know, maybe get a good laugh out of?
The sense is that he probably pays some attention. How he reacts to that is going to be the bigger question. But clearly, the North Koreans love to do what's normally called saber rattling. They like to get the attention. For a long time, their strategy seemed to be that they would cause a lot of fear, cause some panic, rattle the sabers, and then use that as a starting point for negotiations to get something they wanted from the international community. What they want now, it seems, is some recognition that they are a nuclear power, that they are a legitimate power. Is the U.S. going to give that to them? That's very unlikely. But again, it's a delicate situation. Remember, because it's not just the nuclear weapons. We're talking here about this assessment that North Korea can use a nuclear weapon, but at the same time, they've significantly tried to upgrade their conventional forces. So you have a tinderbox. You have a war on the Korean Peninsula that's never actually ended. So how far is he going to push it? What does he want right now? It's been a constant game on the diplomatic stage. And the hope that most people have is that nobody's going to miscalculate, that nobody's going to take the rhetoric the wrong way other than saber rattling and actually do something that lands everybody in a position where they don't want to be.
Jeff Selden, U.S. National Security Correspondent. Jeff, thank you very much.
Anytime.
Pyongyang's UN mission contended that new UN sanctions against it for its missile tests were a flagrant infringement upon its sovereignty, with state media claiming they were the result of a heinous U.S. plot to isolate and stifle the reclusive communist country. North Korea told a security conference of key regional leaders in Manila that it would never bargain away its development of nuclear weapons or ballistic missiles, and said it would teach the United States a, quote, severe lesson with nuclear strategic force if Washington launches an attack against it. As this story continues to develop, follow all the latest details on Facebook at VOA Asia and the voanews.com website. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on voanews.com. A report says the United States concludes North Korea has miniaturized a nuclear warhead. Tillerson visits Thailand for trade and security talks. A 6.5 magnitude quake strikes China's Sichuan province. Myanmar steps up efforts against nationalist monks. In East Java, a statue of a Chinese god stirs controversy. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson has made a short visit to Thailand for talks on trade and regional security matters, including discussions on pressuring North Korea over its nuclear and missile programs. Following his visit to a regional security forum in the Philippines, Tillerson, the highest-ranking U.S. official to visit Thailand since a 2014 coup, arrived in Bangkok Tuesday to meet with Prime Minister Prayuth Chan-o-cha and his foreign minister. In a statement to VOA, a U.S. embassy spokesperson said the secretary discussed the broad range of U.S.-Thai cooperation on regional security, trade, and investment, and other areas, including through regional forums like ASEAN. He also raised regional and global issues, including the security threat posed by North Korea, as well as developments in the South China Sea. In addition to seeking support for a U.S. policy designed to isolate North Korea for violating United Nations sanctions over its nuclear and missile programs, Tillerson discussed trade issues with his hosts. Thailand had the 11th highest trade surplus with the United States at nearly $19 billion last year, placing it on President Donald Trump's list of countries to be investigated over trade practices. However, Thintanen Pongsudhirak, a professor of political science at Chulalongkorn University in Bangkok, said the trade deficit went down in the past year, giving both sides more room to maneuver on the issue.
This is a bargaining chip. I think that the Trump administration is not going to go all the way and start punishing Thailand. And Thailand also has been trying to accommodate. This is just a part of the larger relationship. I think as we can see Thailand being more accommodating, the Trump administration will probably be more compromising. And this will mean that the whole relationship can then realign and move on.
He added the U.S.-Thai relationship hit rock bottom with the Obama administration following the 2014 coup, but that the Trump administration is engaged in a regional realignment focused on its North Korea policy. The embassy spokesman said Tillerson reiterated our desire as a longtime friend and ally to see Thailand emerge from this transition period as a strengthened democracy that respects and guarantees human rights and fundamental freedoms at home and plays a leading role in advancing regional security and prosperity. Activists say the Trump administration is minimizing human rights concerns in a country still run by a military government. Sunay Fasuk, a senior researcher for Human Rights Watch Asia, speaking via Skype, said a return to democratic civilian rule should happen for a normalization of the bilateral relationship, and the meeting with Secretary of State Tillerson is the highest-level U.S. contact since the military coup.
Tillerson is the highest-ranking U.S. government official that visited Thailand since the coup in May 2014. It should have been an opportunity for the U.S. to reaffirm its position in support of respect for human rights and democratic rule, which has been in crisis in Thailand at the moment. But sadly, up until now, we haven't heard any indication at all that human rights is part of the agenda in his meeting with the junta leader, General Prayuth Chan-o-cha.
Secretary Tillerson next traveled to Kuala Lumpur for meetings with Malaysian officials, and he's expected to return to Washington later Wednesday. Our thanks to Colin Lovett in Bangkok for sending us the story. Happening now in Asia, a 6.5 magnitude earthquake struck the remote and mountainous Sichuan province of China late Tuesday, according to the U.S. Geological Survey. Up to 100 people are feared dead, thousands more injured. The epicenter of the quake was in a sparsely populated Engawa Prefecture. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. Thanks for joining us. A prominent Thai journalist has been charged with sedition for Facebook posts criticizing the military junta. A lawyer for Pravit Rajanafruk says the senior writer for the news website Kosod English acknowledged the charges at the police department's Technology Crime Suppression Division. Rajanafruk has used social media to criticize the junta, which took power after a 2014 coup, which overthrew the elected civilian government. After meeting with police, Pravit told reporters, quote, "I'm not surprised by the charge. As we all know, we are living under the NCPO regime. Anyone who criticizes them must pay the price." Rajanafruk has spent 23 years writing for the English daily The Nation in Bangkok, and he faces charges of both for sedition and violating the Computer Crime Act. He could face up to 14 years in prison. He has previously served detention twice for what junta officials call attitude adjustment in 2014 and 2015. You're listening to VOA Asia.
From Pink to Pitbull, Beyonce to Bruno Mars, the hits live here on the Top 20 Countdown. Hi, I'm Ray McDonald, and for the past 30 years, I've been counting down the very best of the Billboard Hot 100 Pop Singles Chart. The hit list never sleeps, so don't you miss a moment of the action. Join me every Thursday for the Top 20 Countdown, right here and worldwide on the Voice of America.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull says the government will hold a vote later this year that could put the country one step closer to legalizing gay marriage. Turnbull says he is following through on a campaign pledge to hold a compulsory plebiscite in November. A place to visit online every day is VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. More now on the 6.5 magnitude earthquake that struck the remote and mountainous Sichuan province of China late Tuesday, according to the U.S. Geological Survey. Details remain scarce, but the Chinese government is saying up to 100 people are feared dead, thousands more injured in that quake. At least 4 people have been confirmed dead and 30 injured so far. The epicenter of the quake was in Engawa Prefecture near a well-known national park, with the area sparsely populated by mostly Tibetans, many of whom are nomadic herders. Tremors from the quake were felt as far away as the provincial capital Chengdu, 284 kilometers from the epicenter. Earthquakes are fairly common in China, especially in the mountainous southwestern province. Tuesday's earthquake was not far from the site of an 8.0 magnitude quake that devastated the region in 2008, leaving 87,000 people dead or missing. VOA Mandarin reporters are monitoring closely and posting updates at voanews.com and on social media, including Facebook. You're listening to VOA Asia. Developing at this hour in Asia, dozens of people from East Java community organizations rallied in Surabaya to demand a statue of a Chinese god be demolished. Protesters gathered in front of the East Java Provincial Legislative Building, saying the representation of a warrior god fails to reflect Indonesian culture. You'll find the latest stories and features daily on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, according to a recent study, an examination of the brains of 111 deceased players of professional American football showed that all but one had degenerative brain disease believed to be caused by repeated blows to the head. Scientists say even when it looks mild, a concussion can still have severe effects, so prompt diagnosis and treatment are crucial. VOA's George Pudich spoke with a neurosurgeon who treats many victims of concussion.
For many years, neurosurgeons treating patients with brain injuries were focused on those in a coma, while concussions were treated as a milder injury. During the past 10 to 15 years, research on head injuries has accelerated because of heightened awareness about the long-term consequences of concussions suffered by soldiers, athletes, and traffic accident victims. The clinical director of the Brain Trauma Research Center at the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center, Dr. David Okonkwo, says one of the biggest challenges is getting a quick and reliable diagnosis. He spoke to VOA via Skype.
We're getting very close to a blood test that will highlight people in the early minutes to hours following a concussion.
Okonkwo says for now, the diagnosis still relies on a subjective assessment of the patient, so a substantial number of concussions remain unrecognized and underdiagnosed. Since no two concussions are alike, Okonkwo says researchers also are working to improve the analysis of the injuries.
There has been a tremendous amount of effort in taking the neuroimaging strategies that we have today to take pictures of the brain and revolutionize them into modalities that are of much higher resolution and much better quality.
Researchers are also developing tools for testing patients for specific kinds of concussion, which can affect balance, vision, cognition, memory, or some other brain function. But Okonkwo says an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure.
This has been another area of heavy investment, not just in the Department of Defense, but in professional sports leagues, as we search for ways to improve the safety for our military personnel, but also improve the safety of athletic endeavors.
Okonkwo says the ability to diagnose and understand the consequences of a concussion and to target treatment to an individual patient is much better than 10 years ago and ahead of public awareness of the advances. George Putich, VOA News, Washington.
Advancing, too, is technology. Many of us carry around smartphones. You may have seen smart light bulbs. And now they're smart shoes. A Japanese engineer has created LED footwear that becomes a glowing computer display. And even though there are other shoes on the market that glow, VOA's Deborah Block walks us through the science of these shoes that step it up a notch.
This dancer is showing off the new LED footwear called Orf. The innovative shoes were designed by an electrical engineer in Japan.
We had to come up with a proper shoe design that people would wear. We had to worry about the shoe's comfort and durability. It was challenging to achieve all this.
He explains the logistics behind the design.
There are three sensors inside the shoes, an accelerometer, a gyroscope, and a compass. The shoes are connected to a computer, and we can measure very precisely the speed and the angle of the moving shoes.
Each glowing sole is powered by 50 LED lights that can be individually controlled using a smartphone app.
We provide this app for free on both iOS and Android platforms. And by clicking here, you can choose a scene setting. This changes the combination of the color pattern and sound. As you change the scene, you get different sound effects and colors.
The shoes can also be programmed to light up when the wearer receives an email or message, and they can help provide directions for walkers by lighting up the direction they should go.
Wearing them makes my days more fun. In the evening, when I was walking with them, I had my head down, looking at them all the time and admiring how beautiful the colors were.
The LED shoe is also expected to be updated with a health app in the future. Deborah Block, VOA News, Washington.
While you're busy watching your shoes, just be sure you're watching where you're going as well. You've been listening to VOA Asia. Our program is available on iTunes and SoundCloud. We're also on VOA Asia Facebook, a great place to listen and get in contact with us. You can send us an email as well at voaasia@voanews.com. Another place where you can listen if you happen to be in Myanmar is Facebook at VOA Burmese. We thank everybody who's joined us there today. Our director is Tracy Carter, our engineer Dan Crafton, our managing editor is Diane Gao, our VOA Asia team includes David Bird and Ali Ogden. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day.